Well, you know, it's been a long time coming. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Hi, Randy. How are you? It is great to be here. Thanks very much for making this happen. It's been many years that you and I have been in touch, so it's great to have this opportunity.
Were there any specific musicians that influenced your style of singing?
I would have to say that it really is musicians, not vocalists, that have influenced the way I do what I do and how I do it, and how I've learned and changed over the years. Definitely Charlie Christian, great guitarist from long ago. Miles Davis, definitely. We've all been influenced by him so dramatically. There are so many different ways that he's touched us because his musical journey was so varied and so remarkable. Chucho Valdez, definitely. Stan Getz, another great saxophone player. Paul Desmond, I think, has to be in there. Chick Corea, without a doubt. Keith Jarrett. And did I say Charlie Hayden? I'll definitely have to put Charlie Hayden in there. Big Spider Beck, again, from days gone by. And very, very much my working band and the folks that I perform with, Barry Sames, Aaron Graves, Lee Smith, who is Christian McBride's father, Marlon Simon, fabulous Venezuelan drummer, percussionist, Chris Farr, young tenor sax player, Terrell Stafford, amazing trumpet player.
Was there anything specific about their playing that you really enjoyed?
Well, I've just given you a very long list of folks who have influenced me, definitely. And, you know, you're always hearing things subliminally as you go through the day or putting things on. I don't think I put things on specifically to listen and learn from for my own performances, per se. It's just all goes into that auditory mixer in there and comes out at the oddest of times, I guess. There's this is a great synthesis that happens as you go through your life listening and listening and listening. I mean, I'm sure that I've learned a lot of things from all of the classical music that I listen to as well, which is phenomenal in its breadth and scope. So I guess I've already touched on Miles and the incredible variety and vibrance and intensity that he brought to all of his playing, and definitely something to learn from Keith Jarrett, his brilliance as well, and his heart and soul. I suppose that would be the common theme through all of these people, is that they put so much of themselves, so much of their hearts into every note that they play, that's what comes through. I don't think it's so much as, I mean, we could get very technical and talk about chord progressions and things like that, but I think it's really just an overarching feel, especially, you know, Paul Desmond's lines, his melodic lines on the saxophone are just so haunting and so magical. Charlie Hayden, what he does on the bass is just, you know, just flips me out, and it's more that sense of what they do and how they do it that you incorporate. So,
oftentimes musicians will go back in time and listen to older recordings that they might pick up, maybe a technique or some kind of lesson that they might incorporate into what they're doing now. Do you tend to tread along those lines, Barbara?
Always listening, like I said, always listening. There's just so much fabulous music that's being recorded all the time. There's so much that has been recorded, so much that I've heard, so much that I haven't heard. And not just in jazz. I mean, the Dave Matthews Band, there's some really kicking stuff that Dave Matthews and a lot of the pop bands are coming out with today, and it's just great to keep on listening, to keep your ears fresh. I know that there have been things that influenced me very directly, of course. Grant Green, his song Idle Moments, which is such a haunting and beautiful beautiful piece of instrumental music that definitely gave me an idea immediately of lyrics that I was compelled to write, and that's on my latest CD. There's an Arturo Sandoval arrangement of Joy Spring that I just came across in the past year, and I would love to do a musical version of his arrangement of that, and of course not the exact Arturo Sandoval arrangement, because that's his, but take it and incorporate it into my style. So it happens, it certainly happens, and we're influenced, as I say, by so many things on so many different levels. I don't think I actually consciously sit down. I stumble upon them, which is, I think, a nice way to go about it. You know, they're like little found treasures and gems.
When it comes to jazz and creating, challenges always crop up, and I think that's what makes it so exciting, not only listening, but performing and being part of the whole jazz experience.
Always looking for things that keeps us all fresh and keeps us on the edge and keeps us exploring and finding ourselves and finding our voice. Definitely the Chick Corea project that I took on for Dakini Land was an amazing challenge. Chick's music is so remarkable, and to listen to, there's such a facility that he has with his playing that it makes you think, oh, well, you know, I know this is this or that technically, but it just sounds so easy. And then you take it apart and try and sing it, and then you realize, whoa, this is a challenge, and there's a reason why not a lot of folks have sung a lot of his repertoire since Flora Purim did it so brilliantly in the 70s. So, yeah, I think we're always doing that, always doing that.
Are there any musicians who are no longer with us who you would have loved to have performed with?
Recently, a wonderful tenor saxophone player who I had the great fortune to meet over the telephone and have a relationship with over the phone passed away, Teddy Edwards, who recorded the first bop tenor sax solo back in the 40s, and I wish that I had been able to record with him, perform with him, his music that he has written, and one of his songs that I perform live, Don't Touch Me, is such a beautiful song, and I spoke to him about 2 weeks before he passed away, of course not knowing that he was going to be gone so quickly, and he was a very, very special man. Jaco Pastorius, who was intensely brilliant bassist in the 70s, and his flame burned out so quickly. But I remember his first album that came out, and just listening to that was, oof. I would have loved to have known him and performed, played with him. And Joe Williams on the vocal side. Joe Williams. That would have been a kick.
Many years ago, Barbara, I watched a variety show. I think it was one of the top variety shows at the time. It was called The Mike Douglas Show, and I believe it was based out of Philadelphia. Now, I understand that you worked there for a while. What was it like?
Working on The Douglas Show was such a learning experience. I learned an immense amount about the entertainment business, of course, and about television production, and then obviously from the folks who came on the show, the musicians were just, you know, Woody Herman and the Thundering Herd was on the show, and Benny Goodman and Ella Fitzgerald, and Benny Goodman, I already said Benny Goodman, let's see, Tony Bennett, So many to listen to and to watch and to see how they did what they did. And I learned a lot. I think the relationships that I've kept up, though, for the people who work behind the scenes, and they have all gone on to such amazingly interesting careers in the creative world that have influenced a host of people across the country in terms of what they've done in film and television, and we've all stayed in touch, which has been great. That constant source of creativity, you know, it's great.
If you only had to make a recording with one musician, I know this is tough, who would it be?
These are very unfair questions when you say just one musician that I have yet to record with or that I'd want to record with who is still living. I mean, it's, you know, very, very tough. But I would have to say Charlie Hayden would be the one. His last several CDs with his, you know, his Quartet West have just been my kind of music, I guess. Well, that's why he records it as music, so I don't have to talk about it. You can go out and listen to the CDs, and you'll know what I'm talking about. But yes, Charlie, I would love to. In fact, I actually sat next to him once on a plane in the 70s when I was touring, and on the same plane touring with rock and roll bands and doing some tech work, as I say. Blue Oyster Cult was on the airplane, and there was Charlie Hayden. He and I sat together, and little did I know that I should have gotten his phone number then to keep for 30 years later.
Many musicians at some point in their life fantasize about forming dream bands. Some of them are lucky enough to have a dream band that is backing them up or that they're working with. Have you ever thought of forming a dream band? And if you did, who would it consist of?
You can't possibly expect me to answer this question off the top of my head. Wow, you're getting tougher instead of easier. You know, they're just, the list would just be so very, very long. But right up front would be the musicians that I play with now. I have a dream band, who I mentioned earlier, Lee Smith on bass, Aaron Graves and Barry Sames alternating on piano, John Swanna, who is a trumpet player out of Philly, who is remarkable. Terrell Stafford, another trumpet player. John Blake, the jazz violinist. Marlon Simon on drums and percussion. Dan Monahan, my drummer as well. You know, these are really remarkable, remarkable musicians. And it's a dream to play with them every time we perform. And I would have to just probably include those folks that I mentioned in our first question, definitely.
You've been afflicted with a terrible, devastating illness known as Lyme's disease. Now, how has this affected your performing?
The Lyme disease definitely had a huge effect, because it did quite literally just about take me out permanently. Had it for a long time before I got diagnosed, had it for a long time before there was a symptom. And naturally, like so many other Lyme disease patients, it was very atypical, mimicked a lot of other illnesses, had a lot of misdiagnoses, and was on a pretty serious downward spiral. I was in the midst of finishing my second CD, Ask Me Now, and had to stop recording because at a certain point I could no longer move. I could no longer speak, didn't have enough strength really to breathe, so each breath was a full-time job, just to breathe in and breathe out. And then the nerve damage that I've been left with, so, you know, pretty painful. But I have to say that the one time that I do not have pain is when I am performing, and that is such a blessing, because otherwise I have it pretty much all the time from what I'm left with. But I'm very, very fortunate to have come back as far as I have from the edge of the precipice. Coming back was difficult indeed because I had a intravenous in my arm, and I remember the first couple of gigs I did, I still had it in my arm. I literally was kind of rolled out of bed, went to the performance because I just had to get back, was taken back right away, and passed out. And it was exhausting. And I still find that I cannot bounce back after a performance. It takes me about a day or two to recover completely. Just the fatigue and things like that. But the fact that I can perform again and I can't play the piano anymore because of the nerve damage, or play the violin, but I write and, you know, do lots of other things, so I'm really very, very lucky.